Emily said, I can speak for 2 hours.
At least.
Appreciate the introduction, appreciate being here. I know, I recognize many of you, I know some of you, and I was at Thomas More for 2 years.
On the north side.
For some reason, they still have my picture on the wall up there. I was in there last night. It's still up there.
There's darts in it now.
I noticed that. So I'm honored to be here. When I was in the Army as a scientist, environmental scientist in Tacoma, as I got connected with the Sarens in Tacoma, I think it was the founding council, or one
Seattle
of the founding councils.
Seattle,
and then Tacoma was like number, I think they're in the first four or five.
Yeah.
At least they said they were. So I was in the, we had the young Sarens over there. It was a group of young adults, 21 to 35. And so we did things monthly. And then I also attended the Saren meetings too in Tacoma. So I got to meet many of them over there and was active in that. And then I went to the seminary and didn't have much time for that anymore. Anyways, this afternoon, Emily asked me, I said, what do you want me to speak about in those 25 minutes, 20 to 25 minutes? And she said, well, you know, vocation story or something. And so, well, that's still a mystery to me. I'm still figuring it out. But so instead, I'm going to talk about something exciting. I think it's exciting. And I think it'll be beneficial for you. Because as Sarens, your primary role in bringing about vocations, you know, walking through the vineyard and bringing people out of the vineyard and getting them into the seminary or convent is prayer. That's the primary way, right? That's the primary way. So prayer is absolutely critical. When you pray, you have to pray well, and you have to, let's be honest, the more you pray, the more you're going to be a target. So I'm going to talk about something which will help you, I think, help you in your life, your spiritual life, which will then directly impact your ability to help recruit young men for the seminary and young men and women for monasteries and convents and religious life. My first tour in Afghanistan was with the 101st Airborne Division out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And after we were in eastern Afghanistan for the first 30 days, there was a special ceremony in which we were given a combat patch on our right shoulder with the insignia of the 101st Airborne Division, a Screaming Eagle with a banner airborne written over it. And so these were given to all the soldiers in the unit on the 30th day of being in country to show that we were in a combat zone. I was on mission that day. I was out flying around somewhere bringing the sacraments to God's holy people. And so I got back and they gave me the patch to put on my right shoulder, because on the left shoulder in the Army, you wear the insignia for the unit that you're assigned to. And on the right shoulder, you would wear the patch for a unit you've been in combat with. So they gave me the patch to wear on my right shoulder. And I didn't wear it all year. I didn't wear it in Afghanistan for the next 11 months. I just didn't. And I was very intentional about not wearing it, because people would come up to me all the time, at least several times a day, and say, hey, Chaplain, why aren't you wearing your combat patch? You've been in country here, you've been in Shaddai, you've been in all sorts of crazy situations, why aren't you wearing your combat patch? And I would remind them that my right sleeve was blank, because the real combat is invisible. It's against the forces we cannot see. And so my right shoulder patch area was blank that entire year in Afghanistan. And I cannot tell you how many people came up and talked to me. And I used it as a moment for evangelization to let them know, yes, we're in a combat zone, but the real combat zone is invisible. And guess what? We're in the midst of it right now. Jesus says in the Gospels, do not be afraid of the one who can kill the body. Instead, be afraid of the one who can kill the body and cast the soul into Gehenna, the invisible realities. And in Ephesians chapter 6, St. Paul talks to us about, reminds us about spiritual combat and being prepared, putting on that armor of God for spiritual combat against the powers, the principalities, etc. that cannot be seen. Spiritual warfare. So I'd like to tell you a couple of anecdotes and true stories from my own experiences, and then one from another person from combat zones, and to relate those to spiritual combat, and hopefully you can apply some of these principles to your own spiritual life. I remember one evening, my bodyguard, my chaplain assistant, and I, because U.S. chaplains aren't allowed to carry weapons, unlike many other nations, which the chaplains are armed. I remember going to confession to a Polish priest, and we sit down. He said, oh, wait, let me take this out first. Puts a pistol on the table. So I had a bodyguard. I had a chaplain assistant. And we're waiting out the HLZ, the helicopter landing zone, one night. And it's pitch dark out. You could see the stars in the sky. It was absolutely beautiful. We're almost at 8,000 feet in the mountains. No moon out, no lights anywhere else. And we could hear the helicopters flying over, but you look up in the sky, you can't see anything because they're flying without any lights at all that you can see with a naked eye. So we can hear them flying overhead. And then at one point, the bodyguard, chaplain assistant, gives me his night vision goggles. He says, hey, sir, look through these. And so look through the night vision goggles, and you can see the mountains. You can see the ground. You can see the helicopters flying over. In fact, you can see that there's strobe lights and indicator lights on these helicopters. You can't see with the naked eye, but these are infrared. So under night vision, you can see everything, almost as plain as day. In our spiritual life, we have to be able to see things through the lens of the Spirit, the Holy Spirit. We have to be able to see things through the lens of the gospel. These are going to illuminate for us the spiritual realities. A lot of people think that there is no devil, there's no hell, there's no spiritual combat around us. They're not looking at things through the spiritual lens. And they're in great danger. We have to be able to allow the Holy Spirit to enlighten our minds to the spiritual realities around us. Otherwise, we're not going to do too well in spiritual warfare, spiritual combat. I was at another place, and this was Combat Outpost Chark. I think. This is a very small place. It was, in the daytime, it was absolutely beautiful, surrounded by orchards, but it was the Wild West. And there was a lot of Taliban around, and it was a very dangerous situation, very dangerous at this particular place. So we flew in at night because they had been shooting at helicopters. So we flew in at night. It was dark. It was absolutely dark. I got off the aircraft. I couldn't see the hand in front of me. It was dark. And so we get off the helicopter, and we get into the bunker, and we meet the outpost commander, this young captain. And he's telling us about what's around, and it was a very dangerous place. They had just lost, I believe they just lost their doctor, their physician assistant to a rocket that came in, and it was just a very dangerous situation. Anyways, he said that they had some intelligence that there was going to be possibly be an attack later that night. So we're in these buildings, we're in the just waiting for things to happen. And at one point at night, they launched some shot off some mortar rounds, some illumination rounds, which are just these huge flares on parachutes. So they'd shoot them up in the sky several hundred feet. They would float down very slowly, and it wasn't making the countryside as bright as day, but it was pretty close. It was pretty close. You could illuminate. We could see things. And they were doing this so that they could illuminate the enemy's movements out there, so they could see who's approaching the wall. In a similar way, we have to allow the light of Christ, the light. Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the light to illuminate the darkness. We hear in the Gospel of John, he is the light, right? Light from light. He is going to be the one who illuminates the darkness for us. He will dispel the darkness. The devil wants you to remain in darkness. The devil wants people to remain in the darkness of despair and sin and doubt and hopelessness. The devil doesn't want the light of Christ to shine onto your situation, onto your heart, into your life. Because then, when the light of Christ illumines something, we can see the spiritual realities for what they are. And they're not more powerful than God. So it's very important for us to allow Jesus Christ, who is the light of the world, to illuminate the darkness around us. Next, I was at another outpost. This was in a very interesting part of Afghanistan. I thought it was beautiful. And we arrived by helicopter about 8:30 in the morning. And they had just been attacked like at 8 o'clock that morning. Some Taliban had fired rockets in or shooting or whatever. And so we get there at 8:30 right after this happens, and they're trying to clean things up. And we meet the cop, or the combat outpost commander, another young captain, shows us around. And so I have mass available for confessions. My bodyguard and my chaplain assistant and I were talking to soldiers. And turns out that this particular combat outpost was attacked almost every morning at 8 o'clock, like clockwork. Clockwork, 8 o'clock. I thought, well, that's interesting. So later that night, the message came when the helicopter is going to come the next morning for us. It's supposed to come at 7:50. Darn, we're going to miss this. So we get up in the morning, bags are packed, ready. We're walking outside the main part of the outpost to the landing zone about 7:45. I was hoping that the things were going to cook off a little bit earlier in the morning, right? And we get out there, 7:50, helicopter's still not there. 7:55, helicopter's still not there. And I thought, oh, maybe we're going to catch this after all. But then the helicopter comes over the hill and lands at the landing zone. And my chaplain assistant and I are walking out to the helicopter. And I'm approaching from the very front, and the helicopter pilot is looking at me, and he's motioning to me. He's trying to get my attention, and he's trying to tell me to look behind me. So I turn around, and the outpost is under attack. You know, the machine guns up on the towers, they're shooting at somebody. You can see the bullets are coming in and impacting the walls. There's a lot of dust, a lot of confusion. I can't hear anything because we're so close to the helicopter, but the outpost is under attack. So we get on the helicopter, and he takes off fast and low. And it was almost like being an amusement park ride. It's fast and low over the mountain to get out of there. The enemy had developed a trend or a pattern, which was recognizable. And if you look back into your own spiritual life, if you look at the times where you're tempted or you have discouragement or desolation, you're probably going to see some trends. You're going to see some patterns. Okay, whenever I have a conversation with this person, whenever I go to this place, whenever this happens, I'm tempted. The devil's tempting me. There's patterns. Recognize those patterns and avoid those patterns. Do something about that. So you're ready when that thing does happen, you will be more alert and more ready to deal with that temptation. Another time, we're going up the Pesh Valley. This is near the another valley where there's a couple documentaries made of a outpost up there, Restrepo. This was in eastern Afghanistan. This was the Wild West. It was a very dangerous place. If we flew up there, we had to have helicopter gunship support to fly in there. It was very dangerous. This particular day, we're driving up on ground convoy. And the mission was to stop at 3 combat outposts and have mass and be available for confessions and talk to soldiers briefly, and then finally get to the main forward operating base at the top of the Pesh Valley later that night, stay overnight, have mass, and then leave the next day. Well, the first outpost was, we parked, but we're parked outside the walls for a while, and I asked the vehicle commander, said, why aren't, well, the vehicle commander turned around, and he said, hey, chap, sorry for the delay, some snipers shooting at the outpost. So we wait out there for 10 minutes, and we finally go, and the sniper's still shooting. He said, hey, chap, what we're going to do is we're going to lower the back door, and you run to the bunker. I said, okay. So we did it, and had mass on an aid station litter. Because they didn't have a chapel, and we couldn't get to the place where they normally have things, activities like mass, because somebody was shooting outside. So we had mass, and got back in the vehicles, go to the next place, back in the vehicles, go to the third place, get back in the vehicles. And by then it's dark, it's very dark, and there's no lights on the vehicles. They're not using any lights driving up the valley because it's very dangerous. If the enemy can see your lights, then they're going to shoot at the lights. So complete blackout conditions. We're going up the road. They're using a night vision camera system on the vehicle to negotiate the road. And we go around the corner. Keep in mind, this is a road above the Pesh River in a canyon, okay? We're going around this corner, and these vehicles are very heavy, and the driver probably hugged the corner a little bit too tight, and the roadway gave way, and we start rolling down, which was frightening, because I was thinking we're going to roll down into the Pesh Valley, and we're going to land upside down in this armored vehicle, and we'd all drown. That's exactly what I was thinking. But God's providence, this was the second time in 90 days God spared my life. We hit a tree, the vehicle hit a tree and stopped us from rolling completely down into the river. Well, we're upside, I didn't know it at the time, but we're upside down. The vehicle stops, there's no lights in the vehicle. Imagine being in a vehicle, you can't see anything. You're strapped in, and so we're trained to brace ourselves in case we were upside down when you're releasing the seatbelt. Sure enough, it's a good thing I was, because not only were we upside down, but we're actually facing down river too, or down the hill as well. And it took us 4 or 5 minutes to find which door was not blocked, and then to lift that 300 or 400 pound door to get out. It was quite an experience. Well, we get out finally, but I tell you, there was a lot of confusion. Everybody was very calm, but it could have been a very confusing time. I mean, you're upside down in a vehicle, there's no lights, you don't know exactly where you are, you don't know if you're 5 feet away from the river, you don't know if there's somebody outside who's ready to you know, kill you as soon as you get out of the vehicle. The darkness. It's very easy to be afraid in the darkness, to be confused in the darkness. The devil wants people to remain in darkness. That's where the devil has power over people. It's in the darkness. Once again, the importance of allowing the light of Christ to shine into that darkness, to dispel that darkness. Another time, this is the second deployment. We're in very eastern Afghanistan. We're probably only, 10 or so miles from the Pakistani border. If you watched Zero Dark Thirty, which is a movie made about the killing of bin Laden, one of the scenes takes place at one of the outposts in the area where I was. And so I would like to run almost every day in order to decrease stress, stay in shape, and keep my mind off of crazy things. And the perimeter around this particular outpost was about 4.5 miles long. So it was a decent run. Plus your elevation in Afghanistan, so it's a pretty good run. And I would run that several times a week, this particular perimeter several times a week. And some of my parishioners who worked in the intelligence office, the intelligence center, they would sometimes come to me and say, "Hey, Father, tomorrow don't run the perimeter." I'd say, "Why not?" They say, "Father, don't run the perimeter tomorrow." They couldn't tell me exactly what the intelligence was. But it's probably something like, well, I found out later, after the fact, that in other places, one of the things what the enemy would do is, one of the ways they would incite fear is to try to kidnap an American soldier in an area of an outpost where it wasn't visible by the guard towers or something. So they would just park a vehicle out there with a couple dudes in it with wire cutters and guns. And they'd wait for somebody to come around the corner and steal them, snatch them, and try to hold them hostage or try to get a ransom or something like that. And there's a few places around this particular outpost that on the perimeter road that I'd run. I'd say about 95% of it, 90-95% of it was in the, you could see it with from one of the watchtowers, from one of the guard towers. But there's a few places where, because of the train, you couldn't see the rest of the outposts and they couldn't see you. So they would say, "Father, don't run the perimeter today, or don't run it tomorrow." I had to rely on people who knew more than I did. In our spiritual life, we're probably going to have to do the same too. We're going to have to rely on a good confessor. We're going to have to rely on a good spiritual director. We're going to have to rely on the fathers of the church. We're going to have to rely on the saints. We're going to have to rely on the counsel of a good priest to help us in the spiritual combat, to keep us out of very dangerous situations. Because if we choose the right person, they're going to know more than we do. And they may keep us out of some very dangerous situations.